This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer. Jason Croft is at the controls this hour. Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. In this hour, we have a health topic for you. This is one of those things that we have done on a pretty regular basis over the years. Many physicians here from the community have been generous with their time to come in to be here on the show and talk about their particular area of practice. And we have people who are fairly general. We have people who concentrate on specific parts, and we'll be doing one of those this morning. Our guest is Dr. James Harms. He is an orthopedic surgeon with the Carl Spine Institute in Urbana, and for quite a long time, actually, has been here at least one time a year to talk about the back and care of the back. And if you have basic questions, have some sort of problem, we can discuss that, you know, to the extent that we can discuss it over the phone. If you have more general informational questions about the back, what can go wrong with it, how to take care of it, we can do that too. Any and all of that is certainly good, and the doctor will do his best to answer whatever questions that you might have. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. We also have email, so if you would like to send your question that way, you may. That's will-talk at illinois.edu at any point here. Questions are welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here
once again. I was thinking, one of the things I was thinking about was when you look at the places that people have pain, or they say that they have pain in the area that which you deal with, most of it seems to be either in the lower back or in the neck, maybe not so much in between. Is that because those two points, they really are the big stress points?
The anatomy is different, and we think that's the major factor. In the neck, for example, or cervical spine, you have a lot of motion. You can turn your head, you can bend your neck forward, backwards, to the side. There are lots of motions that are possible. The same goes with the lumbar spine. It is constructed to allow side bending, forward bending, backward bending, and twisting. That's in contrast to the thoracic spine, or the area in between. The 12 bones and discs in between are supported by ribs that attach to the spine. And so the ribs and muscles attaching to the ribs absorb a lot more of the load, which is not possible in the areas that don't have ribs. Also, the motion in the thoracic spine from level to level is a lot less than in the cervical spine or the lumbar spine, lower back. So we think those are the major factors. People still get degeneration of the discs in those areas. People still get arthritis in those areas. But it takes a lot more to become symptomatic in the middle part of the spine than it does at either end.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have talked about the fact that the strength of your abdominal muscles is important to support the part of your spine that's there. Do the muscles in your neck, do they have some sort of role in supporting the structures there?
Absolutely. We know that if people have underlying disc degeneration in the neck or the lower back, that cardiovascular fitness exercise can help by stimulating endorphins to suppress the pain signals affecting the brain. Mm-hmm. If the neck muscles are strengthened, if the lower back muscles are strengthened, then those muscles, in theory, absorb most of the load and less of the force is transmitted down to a sensitive arthritic area or disc degenerative area.
So, and just one other thing, and I have a caller here that we can take. People, I'm sure that they understand then that if you have pain in the neck, you have pain in the back, you know, you're feeling that what's going on is somewhere right around there. Well, I think one of the things you said we might actually talk a little bit about is the fact that you can have leg and arm pain that can be definitely related to what's going on in your trunk.
Absolutely. Every week I get a patient who said, I went to my doctor with my hip problem. He did a hip x-ray. My hip looks fine. He said, it's coming from my back. Did an MRI. Now I need you to help. And the same goes for upper extremity. A lot of times patients will go to a shoulder doctor, and the shoulder doctor may say, yes, you have some minor problem in your shoulder, but it's your neck that's causing the problem. Just as if a person has a heart attack, the left arm can go numb. The same can happen with the spine. Now, there's nothing wrong with the left arm when you have a heart attack, but the same nerve that goes to the heart goes to the left arm. And so sometimes it can be confusing for the individual with that particular symptom. If one has pressure on a nerve in the neck, one can get pain going down the arm or weakness or numbness, even without any accompanying neck pain on occasion. The same goes for the lower back. If you have a spur, a piece of disc rubbing on a nerve, or any other cyst, for example, that can cause leg symptoms, even in the absence of back pain, although often there is back pain with it. So you can feel it where the nerve goes as opposed to where the problem is.
Yeah, okay, very good. We have a caller here. We'll bring them right in, not to make them wait. And this caller is in Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Excuse me. Hi. I'll try and keep this brief, but it's fairly complicated. I have a year ago in December, my feet got cold and I couldn't get them warm. The only time they'd be warm was when I would go to sleep at night. Tests for diabetes were negative. Circulation was fine. I went to a neurologist. He said I had peripheral neuropathy. I started taking gabapentin from my GP. Increasing dosages, no relief. So I went to see another neurologist. He did the same test. Says, no, you don't have neuropathy, but he really didn't offer much in the way of an alternative diagnosis. But during the course of the conversation, he used the word compression. My wife, who had had back surgery a couple years before, picked up on that and said, well, you might go see the chiropractor because he might be able to do something for you. Go see the chiropractor. He does an x-ray, says, your spinal canal seems to be rather narrow. You might have some stenosis going on. Had me get an MRI, which showed a bulge at L4-5, not particularly large, but a bulge nonetheless. I go see my GP, and the chiropractor said, yeah, I think your back is what's the problem with your feet. I go see my GP. He says, no, I disagree. So I thought, well, we'd really like the guy who had done my wife's back surgery. So I thought if anybody can read an MRI, it'll be him. In the meantime, I had flown to Europe, and while I was over there, I developed a pain on my hip, and just at where my leg joins up to my butt. The neurosurgeon was, you know, he didn't make the call one way or the other, but he did order up a lumbar steroid injection. I did that, no relief. He then said, well, there's a procedure we can do. He called it plasma disc decompression. I think it's also known as cannula-assisted microdiscectomy. I thought before anybody sticks a needle in my spine, I'd like to exhaust all the other alternatives, so I started doing PT. I was doing that, doing a lot of exercising. Then in September, all of a sudden, I got really severe pain in both of my butt cheeks. The muscles knotted up. It was really painful. Doctor prescribed a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory and a muscle relaxer. Neither one of those really seemed to do much good. I stopped doing the PT at that point, and I've been kind of at that for some time now. The pain in my backside and the coldness in my feet. In the meantime, I've had a sacroiliac joint injection that didn't do any good, insurance made life difficult, and I wound up going to see another neurosurgeon who said, no, this your seat problem isn't due to your back. It's you've got piriformis syndrome, go get an injection in your piriformis. So I did that 3 weeks ago, and there's been no noticeable improvement since then. And I started doing PT again just this week, working on stretching that area.
Take this adventure you're having and break it down into some parts.
Okay.
Coldness in the feet generally does not come from the lower back.
Okay.
It would most often come from a minor circulatory problem, although neuropathy is a possibility also. Certainly, you've got a disc aging before its time. L4, L5 is the second to the bottom disc. And if that were causing you problems, it would cause low back pain with activity. It would not cause a problem with coldness in the feet.
Okay.
I do not believe you have any spinal stenosis because you've had three surgeons that have not operated on you when you're complaining. And also, classically, an epidural steroid injection should help dramatically for 4 or more weeks if there's pressure on a nerve.
Okay.
Yes, there is a procedure where a tube can be put into a disc and it can be burned out, lasered out, sheared out, or otherwise the volume can be decreased. That is not in favor in mainstream spine surgery circles because the results are not very good. The fact that you had an SI joint injection and it didn't help would suggest that you do not have a major sacroiliac joint problem. Piriformis syndrome is possible, but I happen to think that's overdiagnosed and would be extremely unlikely to cause coldness in the feet. I don't think you've got a diagnosis yet. Now, I also believe...
I thought I had too many.
Well, I don't believe you have a correct diagnosis yet. Let me rephrase that.
I'll go along with that. I won't argue with that.
So there are a number of syndromes where people get cold hands and cold feet. Often when under stress, emotional or physical, the brain or spinal cord sends out too many signals and causes the small muscles around the blood vessels to contract, so the circulation decreases. Sometimes that can be a major problem. Sometimes it can be minor problem. And it would be a rheumatologist who would be most likely to diagnose it. Now, keep in mind that us doctors are not very good when somebody has the initial onset of symptoms of arriving at a diagnosis, and sometimes it takes observation over a period of time, or we have to wait for the person to get some new symptoms that will help us figure out the diagnosis. But if you were in my office, I would say it ain't coming from your lower back. 99% chance I'm right. You need to visit with a rheumatologist. Now, yeah, if you get a little back pain when you rake leaves and shovel snow, you've got a degenerating disc, and I'm going to say keep exercising because that'll help suppress the symptoms, but it probably isn't going to help your cold feet.
Okay.
The butt pain could be coming from the degeneration of the discs. We think that in some people, if a disc is aging more rapidly than usual, there are microscopic holes in the covering of the disc. If chemicals leak out of those holes and go into the nerves, it can cause back pain and buttock pain. So that could be your degenerative disc. On the other hand, it could be coming from the same thing that's causing your feet to go cold. So I think a rheumatologist should be your next stop. The rheumatologist is a type of doctor that is best at diagnosing weird and unusual things.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with this.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon at the Carl Spine Institute in Urbana. And for quite a long time now, at least once a year, we'd like to see him to discuss our back problems. And he always makes us feel better. You got a question? You can give us a call. Seriously, we're here to add to your health knowledge. And if we can help you out, do give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Also, you can send an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. We have someone on our toll free line here to go to next, line four. Hello.
Hello, and good day to you all.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something, and I find it real interesting. I had an occurrence, kind of, here about it 6 months ago. I went to a a doctor and said, hey, look, I got pain down my left arm. And the first thing they said, we can't help you. Go to the emergency room. You've got a heart attack. I said, oh, well, I don't think I have a heart attack, but you're the doctor, so I'm going to go. Got to the emergency room. Of course, I did not have a heart attack. It cost me a few thousand dollars to know exactly what I already knew. How do you get around that kind of a problem? You know, I knew I wasn't having a heart attack. I just have probably a pinched nerve in my neck or something, because I can feel it start to try about there and runs down my arm. Has different little left arm, has a little different little feelings here and there, twinges sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't hurt. Sometimes it does. Has been going on for years and years and years. And I thought, well, maybe I can see what can be helping them. And all I got out of it was a trip to the emergency room to see that I didn't have a heart attack. There seems to be a way to, there should be some kind of way to, you know, make the decision there. Wait a minute, you know, why are we going to charge this guy, $7,000-$8,000 to go to the emergency room when that's not his problem at all?
I agree with you. There should be a way. Unfortunately, I don't have the answer for that. In the legal climate of today, if you come into your primary care doctor's office and you say, I've got left arm pain, maybe you're a little overweight, maybe you don't exercise, maybe you got a family history of some heart problems.
Sir, I'm very active.
Okay.
And I do a lot of work. That's where it comes from.
you're the exception then.
Yeah.
But if the person is not told to get an EKG and an evaluation for their heart, they are very, very liable for all sorts of financial and emotional penalties. So the knee-jerk reaction of each of us is to worry about the worst thing that's emergent. Take care of that first. If it's not that, then go on to the next thing. Now, what you can do the next time this comes up is say, you know, this is exactly the same thing I had last time when I had this type of pain. This is exactly the same type of pain I had last time. I got neck pain with it. I know it's my neck. Why don't we look at the neck first? You can check my blood pressure, check my pulse. You can kind of help the doctor a bit, but the doctor's got to make the call at the end of the visit, and it still may be, I cannot rule out a heart attack. We need to do the safest thing.
Well, sir, obviously, you know, in America, in a medical situation now, you very rarely see a doctor when you go in. You see a physician's assistant, if you're lucky, more than likely just a nurse. And you try to explain that to them, and they said, no, thank you. We're going to send you to the emergency room. And it's just so exasperating, so exasperating. Well, thank you very much, sir.
And it'll probably get worse as time goes on. That's the problem, because doctors are retiring earlier. Many doctors are working part-time these days. We're not graduating as many as we need. Some of this isn't going to get a lot better.
All right. Well, sorry we can't give you a better answer than that. We have a number of other people here, and we'll go on to the next caller on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Like many people, I am a office worker who rarely has any real need to get up from the computer, and I do use a one of those balls, round balls to sit on sometimes, and, you know, I do my best to get up and stretch and so on. But I was wondering what the doctor thought was the best course of things to do to avoid back issues, and also what he thinks of, well, I don't know if I call it a trend yet, but the emerging idea of having a treadmill desk.
I was making a note of that just as you were speaking. Yes, indeed, people with sedentary jobs, that is a risk factor for back problems. The only way that I know of is to change positions frequently and get regular exercise to combat that. Sitting on a ball or an ergonomic chair, getting up and moving around, finding an excuse to get a drink or visit the bathroom, all those things are good. About 3 years ago, 4 years ago, one of our emergency room doctors came to me and said, hey, Harms, what do you think of this idea of a treadmill and a desk with a computer on it all rolled into one? And I have a job where I sit for a couple minutes, I get up and walk around. I very rarely spend more than 10 minutes sitting before I'm up and doing something else. So for me, that was impractical. But I think it would be wise for anybody who has control of their work situation, who generally sits for long periods of time, to see if they could try out such a system and see if it's compatible with their job. Now, a lot of people can't walk and even chew gum at the same time, as you know. I happen to be one of those people that can walk and read a book at the same time. So there's a wide variation of people who have the talent to walk and type on the computer at the same time. I would say talk to your boss, see if you can try it out someplace, and go for it.
All right. Yeah, thank you. I'm curious about what's going to develop in that area, because I wonder if some innovators out there will make some devices that are not quite as cumbersome as a whole treadmill, but perhaps some sort of walking device that's a little more compact and, you know. But, of course, there's all sorts of liability and danger issues, I guess, there.
Well, you can always have a safety harness on, I guess. Or maybe we'll do away with our hands and we'll just put a headset on. And in the future, that's how the computer will work, and it won't be a problem at all.
Sounds good to me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Well, certainly people who work at computers often complain about issues with wrists and shoulders that have to do with typing and mousing. And those are things that can, I guess, be addressed by looking at things like the height of your work surface, what kind of chair you're sitting in, how you have it adjusted, all those sorts of things. Does any of that address back issues, or is that all just about the fact that people are just sitting for a long periods of time?
Well, you commented when I walked in the room that I let the chair down 4 inches here.
Yes, you did. You did. I just wanted to make sure you were comfortable
and
with the chair like that.
That is for my comfort, because I can put my forearms on the table surface, and that takes some of the weight off my shoulders and hence unloads my neck some. I have minor arthritis in the neck and minor arthritis in the lower back, and if I move around and do my exercises, I have very few symptoms whatsoever. When I'm locked in one position for a long time, both areas bother me some. And so I've tried to change around my life, my activities, my work habits in order to minimize those things. So yes, by having some support for your wrist and having your wrist in the best position, you can minimize the symptoms if you have an underlying carpal tunnel syndrome. By having your shoulders supported by your forearms, so some of the weight's taken off, that will minimize the symptoms you get in the shoulders from an underlying problem. I do not believe that lack of support will cause a problem, but as we get older, none of our joints are perfect anymore. Many people find that the head position is important. So if you're looking straight forward, you're less likely to get neck pain than if your chin is down on your chest and you're reading something or you're working at a computer station. Other people find it's just the lack of motion that's a problem, not so much the head position. Mm-hmm. So a person would have to experiment a little bit to find out what works best for any one individual.
Okay. On to another caller, line number 2. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yes, doctor, I turned you on at 11 minutes after the hour, just as you were talking about strengthening of the neck and the trunk. And I have at least one, if not two, bad discs in my neck, and I have a bulging disc in my lower back. And I was wondering what kind of exercises you would recommend that would not put a lot of stress on those areas but yet strengthen them.
There are 3 forms of exercise that are generally prescribed for people with disc degeneration pain. Bulging disc is a sign of disc degeneration. Neck ache or back ache is often a sign of disc degeneration in each of those individual areas. The exercise that has been shown to be most effective is something for your cardiovascular fitness. That can be as simple as walking 2 miles a day. It can be bicycle riding, exercise bicycle riding, Nordic track, swimming laps, walking in the water. Almost any form of exercise can be helpful. Most people with bad necks and bad backs cannot tolerate impact loading, but every once in a while I see somebody that says, gee, the only time I'm comfortable is when I'm running or jogging. So there's quite a bit of individual variability. The next most likely thing to help out is strengthening your trunk muscles in the old lingo. Nowadays, they're called the core muscles or core strengthening. As I mentioned earlier, in theory, if the neck muscles absorb more of the load, then less of the force will be transmitted down to any sensitive areas. The same can be said for the back muscles, and your back support also comes from your abdominal muscles. People with weak abdominal muscles are more likely to have back pain. The third form of exercise that can be helpful, and I think that's the least of the three but still can be helpful, are flexibility exercises. Range of motion exercises for the neck and lower back can be quite helpful. Most physicians have in their offices care of the back booklet or care of the neck booklet or something like that with the basic exercises in it. Physical therapists also know, and trainers know, the basic exercises. And by starting out with some of the simpler exercises, that can help quite a bit, and there's a high probability for success.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, Doctor. Because I do a lot of walking, bicycle riding, and believe it or not, I have a Nordic track sitting here not too far from where I'm speaking right now. So.
Excellent. Hopefully those things are not just available. Hopefully you're utilizing. And I think that if you were to stop exercising for 10 days, are you over 45?
Unfortunately, yes, quite a bit over 45.
I bet if you quit exercising for 7 to 10 days, you'd feel all stoved up and you'd know the reason why you like exercise.
Okay. Now, as far as the core, I know sit-ups are not good for a bad lower back. Is that correct? Is that your...
I would phrase it slightly differently.
Okay.
I would say that anything to strengthen the abdominal and back muscles is good. Single leg raise, a double leg raise, isometric contracting of the abdominal muscles, because you got to contract the back muscles to stabilize the pelvis at the same time. Those are the basic things that almost everybody tolerates. Now, there are, for prevention, sit-ups are just fine, or half sit-ups. And when you're young, a full sit-up can work just fine. So some people's backs cannot tolerate a full sit-up, but most people can tolerate a variation of some sort.
Real quickly, on the neck, now you were mentioning, you know, the cardio and all that, but how does that really doesn't strengthen the neck, though. Is there anything for the neck?
Well, in fact, almost every cardiovascular fitness exercise you can think of must strengthen the neck, because to keep your head from falling from side to side, you have to contract those muscles some. So it helps some, although perhaps not in a major way. But we think that the cardiovascular fitness exercise stimulates the endorphins in the brain, which suppresses some of the pain signals. So there's a direct and indirect help.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So just real quick, for a sit-up to be effective, do you really have to do more than just make sure that you've lifted your shoulders up off the floor?
As I mentioned, there are a number of variations. A single leg raise is probably the easiest one. Mm-hmm. So you're lying down, you've got one hip and knee bent, the other is flat on the surface, and you lift your foot up 6 to 8 inches, hold it for the count of 10, and let it back down again. You have to contract the abdominal muscles in order to keep the pelvis from rotating. You can do a double leg raise, which is harder. Remember, we had to do those in high school, and what a pain.
Yeah.
Those are a lot harder. You can just do the partial sit-up, as you're suggesting, and that's the one most often recommended because most people can tolerate that can't tolerate a full sit-up. So you're reclining with your hips and knees bent on your back. You lift your head and shoulders up just enough to get it off the floor, mat, bed, whatever surface you're on. Hold it for the count of 10 and let it back down again. And do a gradually increasing number of repetitions, and that can be quite helpful.
We're talking this morning with Dr. Jim Harms from the Carl Spine Institute. We're talking about the care of the back. We'll talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, why flying is no fun anymore and may be getting more dangerous. Aviation writer William McGee says airlines' cost-cutting hasn't just added fees and hassles. He says airplane maintenance is being outsourced to foreign companies where some workers can't read manuals for equipment they're working on. His book is Attention All Passengers. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to visit the Promenade Gift Shop for artfully affordable and exceptionally eclectic gifts. More information on upcoming events is at krannertcenter.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Tomorrow morning on the show, our guest in the 10 o'clock hour, journalist and filmmaker Andrew Blackwell, who is something of an eco-tourist, but in an odd way, he goes to places that are really, really nasty. And he's written a book about this. The title of his book is Visit Sunny Chernobyl and Other Adventures in the World's Most Polluted Places. So he'll share some of his experiences with us tomorrow morning at 10. Then one more foray into American politics in the second hour. The guest will be Samuel Popkin. He is professor of political science at University of California, San Diego, and we will talk about what you will find in his newly published book, The Candidate, What It Takes to Win and Hold the White House. You can listen to other programs by going to our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour of the show, James Harms is our guest. He is an orthopedic surgeon. He works at the Carl Spine Institute in Urbana. And for a long time now, he's been stopping by at least once a year. We talk about the back and answer questions. Diagnosis over the phone, well, we really can't do that, but I don't want to discourage anybody from calling. Call in and got some issues you want to discuss with the doctor. He will do his best to help you out. And then you may need to go and see somebody, but this is a place that you can start. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Back to the phones. I think we have someone on our toll free line next. Line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi. I appreciate your taking my call. I'd love to have your input on what's been going on with me. I'm 4 months. I've been having neck and upper back pain. The first maybe 3 months of that, we did anti-inflammatory, a couple of different muscle relaxants. I had physical therapy, and I just 2.5 weeks ago had an MRI. I do have degenerative disc disease. I'm 61 in the cervical area. I think I believe it's 3 and 4. I also have a moderate to severe spinal stenosis, and everything they're trying. I'm on the third muscle relaxant now. I'm taking Xanaflex. I'm also still on pain medication. And so we're about, and I also had an epidural injection 10 days ago that really didn't impact my pain at all. So we're about to start Lyrica and home cervical traction. And I'm just wondering what you think my success will be with that.
Interesting. What you've described is a person with neck and pain going into the thoracic or chest region a bit. And I believe that about 80% of the pain between the shoulder blades comes from the neck itself. So that's quite common. Most physicians do start with the simpler things, such as anti-inflammatory medications, muscle relaxants, and general physical therapy. If that fails and the person's pain is severe enough, then one starts to look for surgical diagnoses, and going through an MRI makes sense. Your MRI has been interpreted as showing arthritis in the neck, some degeneration of the discs, and some narrowing of the spinal canal. Arthritis would cause soreness and stiffness when in one position for a long time. So if you're driving a car and you find you got to turn your head to the right and left and look up and down, if you're working at a computer and you got to get up and move around because your neck gets stiff, that's arthritis. A degenerating disc would cause pain in the neck, sometimes into the shoulders and into the area between the shoulder blades. So it sounds like most of the symptoms are probably coming from the disc degeneration. Narrowing of the spinal canal, because of disc bulging and spurs, is called spinal stenosis. And the symptoms of spinal stenosis in the neck are arm pain, pain going down below the elbow, weakness or numbness in the upper extremities, electric shocks going down the back of the neck. And classically, if you have spinal stenosis, 80% of people who go through an epidural steroid injection are helped dramatically. So I think that there's a question as to whether you actually have symptoms coming from the narrowing of the spinal canal or not. Nerve medications can help dramatically, and Lyrica is one of the more popular choices because it helps a lot of people. So I would say that you're on the right track. Your doctor seems to be doing the right things in stepwise fashion, And if you're not happy with the way things are going, if you've not seen someone who specializes in spine problems, either a physical medicine doctor, an orthopedic spine surgeon such as myself, or a neurosurgeon, that would be your next step.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is our next step. I do have the numbness. Most of the stuff is on my left side. I do have hand numbness, but I have no weakness at the moment. I have those shock pains that you talked about up to my head, down to like the base of my neck, down my arm.
Then that would indicate some narrowing of either the spinal canal or one of the holes where the nerves exit the spine, called
right.
the foramen. And an injection helps 80% of the time if it's given in the right spot. And it may be that it was given in a spot that is not the worst, or it may be you're one of those unlucky 1 out of 5 that it doesn't help.
Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right, very good. Thank you. Well, we'll just keep on going here. Back to somebody on line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I have had surgery on my neck years ago, and I've had lower back problems in the past. And recently, when I sit the back on, and pressure gets put on the back of my right leg, about in the middle of the thigh, I get a numbness and tingling in the rest of my leg. And I'm guessing that it's from my lower back and that I probably must have strained something, but I don't know whether to attribute it to the neck or to the back and if there's anything I can do about it.
Absolutely. If you inherited the genes for your neck to age before its time, you probably inherited the genes for your lower back to age before its time, too. And you probably got some arthritis and some discs that are a little bit older than we'd like. Even people who do not have recognized back problems can get numbness and tingling when sitting unsupported with pressure behind the thigh. There are 4 nerves that come out of the back, meet up in the butt, form the sciatic nerve, go down just above the knee, and then divides into 2 nerves going down further. So anytime you put pressure on the back of your thigh, you can be putting pressure on the sciatic nerve to get that numbness and tingling. The time when it's most common is when sitting on a toilet and leaning forward some. So I think, yes, your nerves are a little sensitive, perhaps because of what's happening in the back. And if you make sure that when you're sitting, you have a footstool or something to put your foot up to elevate your thigh off of the hard surface of the chair or the toilet, that can help dramatically.
Oh, okay.
But you called it right. You got a sensitive nerve because of what's happening in your back.
I see. And there's, other than just exercise and that sort of thing to help the back itself, there's nothing other than that to be done in elevating my, trying to keep it from hitting where the nerve is.
I think that with the level of complaint that you have, doing the simple things makes sense.
Okay.
If you have worsening symptoms, then visit physical therapy for some pain-relieving exercises called McKinsey-based exercises. Consider seeing someone who might order you an epidural steroid injection. Worst-case scenario is you might look at some surgery, but for your level of complaint, I would just change around my life a little bit, and it may not ever get worse.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So just real quickly, for people who are experiencing joint pain, they may well turn to things that are available over-the-counter. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medicines seem to help a lot of people. There are also some supplements that some people think benefit the joints, things like glucosamine and chondroitin. Some people think that by taking that can actually help joints that are worn over time and perhaps even rebuild some of the material there that's intended to cushion the place where the bones come together. Have you had any experience with anything like that you feel is at all beneficial?
No.
No. Okay.
But let me give you a little more explanation than just the simple NO. There are scientific studies in our literature that show that these medications are not generally helpful for the small joints, such as in the back. If the literature also shows that about 30% of people are helped enough that they're happy with their larger joint problems. So if you've got a knee, a hip, or a shoulder problem, either the chondroitin sulfate, the glucosamine, or the combination can be found to be beneficial. It doesn't cure it, but it can ratchet down the symptoms a level so a person is happy continuing to take the medication. There's an occasional person that will tell me, yes, I've taken it, and it helps my back, although that's quite unusual, and the literature doesn't support that. So there may be some idiosyncratic positive reactions to such over-the-counter things.
Okay. Nothing else in the way of particular vitamins, minerals, anything that other than trying to have a healthy, rounded diet that you would say would be helpful?
Unless you have a vitamin deficiency, taking vitamins will not help your back. Now, come back in 10 years, and we'll have injections into the disc of growth hormones and other things to regenerate discs, because that's currently being done in animals and may have moved to humans. There are lots of things on the horizon, if money still goes into research, that will be available. But today, I got to fall back on exercise, quit smoking, and lose weight.
So you think there may be a point where instead of, say, doing a fusion or something like that, removing damaged disc material or perhaps putting in something else, that what you could think about putting in something that would actually lead to a true regeneration of the material?
Absolutely. It's being done in animals now successfully.
Oh, okay. Very good. We have about 10 minutes left with Dr. Jim Harms from the Carl Spine Institute. We're talking about the back and back care issues, and we have a couple of other people here, so we will get them go next to line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question about SI joint. I know this is only sort of related to the spine, but I went to the doctor recently, and I've been taking Piroxicam, which is a anti-inflammatory, and that does help, but it's really rough, and I try not to take it if I don't have to. So the questions I have are, I'm trying to do things like swimming instead of running and such, and I just wondered if there was any suggestions you have to try and strengthen things to pull it all together so the pain would be less and I wouldn't have to take the medication for it.
How was your sacroiliac joint problem diagnosed?
I went to my primary, and I had been having back and hip pain. And I've not had any children. She said that it's more common in people who've had children, but I have not.
Pain around the sacroiliac joint, which, as one might surmise, is the joint between the sacral bone, which most people think of as the large tailbone, and the iliac bone, which is the bone you can feel on the side of your pelvis, that joint can at times be inflamed, often in patients with ankylosing spondylitis, rheumatoid arthritis, post-traumatic situations, and childbirth can sometimes be traumatic, of course. And it's thought to be an inflammation of that joint or an arthritis of that joint. Injections into the joint can help. Arthritis medication can help, but as you are hinting at, sometimes the stomach doesn't tolerate it as well. Celebrex would be a medication that has less side effects with the stomach, but it's still not perfect. Anything you can do to strengthen the back muscles and pelvic muscles can be helpful, and a physical therapist or a trainer could teach you specifically what exercises to do. I can't tell you specifics over this type of venue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. Well, we'll go next to line number three for another caller. Hello. The caller there, line three.
Hello, yes. I'm 58 years old. About 25 years ago, I picked up a stump that was too heavy and hurt the bottom of my back. It's never gone. The injury's never gone away. And I'm active. I work outside. And bending over after about 10 minutes, it gets really sore when I'm splitting wood or I'm walking the fields. It fatigues quicker. I recently climbed a mountain in Guatemala with a full field pack, and I really felt it there. Now, I can make the pain go away if I sit on a bench, a flat bench at the gym, and I put my knees up to my chest so my lower back is like straight and the pain goes away. Now, if I feel there's like three vertebrae down there just above my hip, I can feel where that hurts. and it kind of radiates out, like maybe into a muscle that's attached there. I guess I want to know is, what is it that I did 25 years ago, and will it get worse, and what will happen?
I'll get out my crystal ball and get right back to you. 25 years ago, your back got overloaded. That is, for the strength of your muscles, too much of the force was transmitted down to one of your discs. You probably got a crack in the disc, but it did not go on to a full-blown herniated disc. But that crack probably did not heal properly, so over the years, chemicals would episodically leak out and go into the nerves, causing your flare-up of back problems. That episode has probably accelerated the aging of your back, and you're now left with one or more discs that are less than perfect, and you probably, at age 58, have some arthritis in your back as well. I think you're doing exactly the right thing by staying active and by exercising regularly, but there comes a point where that will not protect you sufficiently. The fact that you feel better when you sit down, the fact that you feel better when you forward bend your spine a little bit, would suggest that your spinal canal may be narrower than it should be, and you may be getting symptoms from spinal stenosis. I think that it's time for you to talk to your primary care doctor and maybe visit a spine specialist and get some more information.
You're telling me everything I didn't want to hear, but I thank you for your...
All right, well, hang up and call again, and I'll give you a different answer.
Okay, I'll let you go. So thank you for the diagnosis.
All right, thank you very much. But we'll have to charge a second time.
Just as much as we charged the first time.
Just as much as we charged the first time, exactly. Line one is next. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You've answered, I think, one of my questions. The second one was, after back surgery, how long before I should resume the exercises I'd been using for years? It's a condition that had existed for maybe 15 years. It's been controlled initially with exercise and then with the injections of steroids.
What kind of surgery did you have?
It removed a spur that was pressing against the sciatic nerve.
Okay.
And at least part of the disc.
When one has a surgery of that type, it never gives you a new back or makes you 18 again. By removing any disc bulge or spur, that takes the pressure off the nerve and helps the symptoms that are coming from pressure on the nerve, usually leg pain with walking any distance and or physical activity of any sort. You're still left with the discs or discs that are older than we'd like, and you're still left with some arthritis, and regular exercise is the most important thing to do to suppress those symptoms. It takes 8 or 9 weeks for the hole to close up where the piece of disc came out. And so if you get rambunctious before then and do backflips, somersaults, or lift refrigerators, you're at risk of pushing out another piece of disc.
Mm-hmm.
If you have had spurs taken out, the surgeon has to take out some of the normal ligament and bone to get in to chip out those spurs. And that weakens the back some. 9 weeks or so of a walking program gives repetitive micro stresses to the area, and the body puts more calcium in to strengthen it. So I tell people, go about 9 weeks, and then gradually, not suddenly, but gradually get back to your regular exercise activities. If you're having trouble doing that or needing some help, then a physical therapist can be of great benefit in guiding you and troubleshooting your return to regular exercise.
So go very slowly with the resumption of the exercise. But I'm walking, I think I've gotten up to close to 2 miles.
Excellent.
And the surgery was less than 2 weeks ago.
Wow. I wish all my patients were like you, sir.
I used a little Vicodin, but not more than one pill a day.
It's not unusual to need the hydrocodone or Vicodin for a number of weeks afterwards. So I'm impressed.
So it sounds, my surgeon thought it was doing well, and it sounds that way to you, then.
You're doing better than well, sir. You're doing excellently.
But don't overdo things.
Use common sense. If you don't have enough common sense, borrow some from a friend or a spouse.
Spouse and friends will probably be willing to. They already have.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I hope that helps. Let's see if we can get one more caller, at least line number two. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a 57-year-old woman who's had a variety of pains in my hip and legs that are sort of sporadic sometimes after walking. Especially on a hard surface, it's so bad I have difficulty getting around, and the next couple hours it's gone. I've gone and had a hip x-ray, but because of the variety of ways it displays, there's nothing wrong on the hip x-ray suggesting arthritis, and I'm concerned it could be back. But what I'd like to ask you is, what sort of information can you come into a doctor with to get to a diagnosis the most quickly? Would it be a pain log? Would it be a...
No, I think you've made a good start. You want to give the location of the pain. You want to mention what makes it better, what makes it worse, what things that you have done to try to treat it already, what studies you've had to try to pin it down, and go from there. Your primary care doctor is a good place to start, and your primary care doctor would then say, well, you need to see an arthritis doctor, rheumatologist, or you need to see a back person, or maybe you need to see a hip or a knee person.
Uh-huh.
But I think you've got a good start on the information that you need to take with you.
But if you're not really inconsistent about when symptoms come, I'm feeling like I want to wait till I have a clear, logical, consistent picture to bring in so that I don't end up going to all four of the specialists if one would get me to the answer.
You're correct. It's like an intermittent car problem. It's really hard to diagnose. Mm-hmm. When symptoms move around, it's more likely to be inflammation or irritation rather than pressure on a nerve. So my best guess, and I underline the word guess at this point, is that you've got some discs that are aging before their time with inflammation or irritation that's going out into the nerves, and it goes into different nerves at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So some form of treatment for a degenerative disc problem would be the best place to start in the absence of any other information.
Okay, so there's no magic information that you want from patients or anything that would be especially helpful.
Well, if you say the pain goes down the back of the leg, the thigh, the side of the calf, into the big toe, I'm going to think you have a problem at L4, L5 in the lower back. But it's the specifics that are going to help us make a diagnosis.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And there we're going to have to stop. We got one more person we just can't take. My apologies, but I want to say thanks very much to Jim Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon from the Carl Spine Institute. Thank you for many years of stopping by here on the program to answer questions. We appreciate it.
It's been 30, in case you've lost count.
30 years. Unbelievable. And there are a handful of these people who have had this long, long association with the program, and just we're very grateful because you've enabled us to do a service for listeners. So,
well, I'm going to miss you because I think it's been fun for me, and I will miss you, and I know the community will miss you also.
Well, there will be another person one day here doing this, and maybe you'll come back and talk with them.
Will he or she have gray hair in their beard?
We'll make that a requirement of the job. Hey, thanks very much.
You're welcome.